Session number 12232, Mr. Ivor Watkins, reel 5.
Mr. Watkins, reel 5. You joined the 15th Battalion at Proven.
Yeah.
What were you doing while you were there? Were you there long?
Well, we were there then till the 31st of July. Well, not to the 31st, because we had moved up. We were there till about 3 days before the 31st of July.
So
we didn't have any specialized training there at all.
It's quite a while. You went out in May, so this would be sort of June.
The end of May, yes. The end of May. I can't think of the exact date.
So you were there about 7 or 8 weeks?
Yes, yes.
I had my
19th birthday there on the 29th of June.
Did you have any sort of celebration?
Oh, Lord, no. There was a sort of restriction there. I think we went up into the village just to have a look around, but there wasn't any movement, shall we say, out and about guarding. We weren't that sort of thing at all.
And
it was just within the confines of the... I forget now, we were in a field under canvas. We were doing drill and that sort of thing, musketry drill, but not any, shall we say... trench warfare or anything like that. We didn't have any training in that at all.
What was it like in the tents?
Well, it was a bit cramped. Our feet was poking towards the tent pole and our rifles were tied to the tent pole there. But of course it was summertime, so it wasn't too bad. We were sleeping on our ground sheets. It wasn't very cold or anything like that. We were now in a different atmosphere altogether than we'd been before.
So it was just a period of basic, more almost basic training again?
Yes. We didn't have, we weren't told that there was going to be a big attack or anything like that. We weren't given any information about that until about 2 or 3 days when we started to move up to Canal Bank.
And what did they tell you?
Well, there was going to be a push. That was the name, a push. We read afterwards that the big plan was to reach the Channel Ports, go up through Passchendaele and reach the Channel Ports, but it didn't come off. The weather was the big thing then. After we came out, the troops that went from our end where we left were going on then through Passchendaele, but they were swamped in the mud and slush.
Did you get any detailed instructions about how to attack, you know,
no,
or what to do?
No.
So you moved out?
We weren't primed at all.
You moved out of Proven towards the end of July.
Yes.
Where did you?
Well, we were moving up by night from one sort of bivouac to the other. Well, we didn't have any shelter. We were sleeping in fields, you see. And our ablutions had to be taken in any little pool or stream we could get near to. And I always felt myself lucky there. I was... lucky I had bought somewhere or another in a canteen a tablet of Erasmic soap, this purple soap, and it gave a wonderful, wonderful lather. So that bit of tablet of soap was lent out, but I always saw that it came back to me. It gave a wonderful lather to have a shave, you know. A wash in any pool or little stream we could get to. Until we finally moved up to Canal Bank. Dawn on the 31st of July.
What was the approach to Canal? Did you go through Ypres or...?
No. If I remember rightly, Pilcombe Ridge is a little to the north of the town of Ypres. We didn't touch the town of Ypres at all.
What was it like as you approached the battle area? What were the signs you could see?
Well, we could hear the rumbling. We could see marks of a little devastation. It's difficult to remember clearly everything. All I know, we got to Canal Bank, ready for that dawn attack in the morning.
So you were going to attack from Canal Bank?
From Canal Bank, we went up over. That's as far as I can remember now.
What was your fighting order? I mean, what did
you take? Well, we had fighting order, of course our valises were left behind. We had our haversack and our trenching tool and our water bottle and our ground sheet or cape in the haversack. That's what we've carried. We're going over light fighting order.
And were you overnight? Were you under much fire at Canal Bank?
No, we weren't under much fire. Whatever was going overhead, long range overhead. As we got up from Canal Bank to make our advance, then the barrage started. Then we went through some light 18-pounders on the way up over the ridge, and they were belting away as hard as they could. The terrain was pretty difficult, on to shell holes, you see. And most of all, they were very, very deep and full of mud and water. So we had to be careful we didn't fall in. But if I remember rightly, there were tapes had been laid out, giving some sort of direction and where to go.
Because Canal Bank would be the reserve line, wouldn't it?
Well, Canal Bank, it was dry. That would be, the casualty clearing station was there and that sort of thing in Canal Bank.
So you moved forward. Were you apprehensive at all?
No. I remember that, no.
Were other people nervous?
No, only that one person that I mentioned earlier on to you. He broke down.
Now, that wasn't on the tape. What happened to him?
Well, he was sent back.
In what way did he break down,
though? Well, he started screeching like a pig. Excuse the expression. He heard a pig screeching. Well, he screeched like a stuck pig sort of thing. It was no fault. There's no fault of his. It wasn't cowardice. A man shouldn't have been in the army at all. His nerves just went bang. And he was sent back.
Did you have any sympathy for him?
Well, we recognised, we knew the fellow. He wasn't the type of boy who'd played football or roughed it up a bit. He was a brilliant pianist. And, in fact, he shouldn't have been in the army at all.
You think he was just temperamentally unsuited, you know?
Well, something went bust, you know, which sometimes happens with people. And to me, it was the first I heard quite a lot about shell shock and that sort of thing. But this, to me, was actual shell shock, because as the barrage opened, it was terrific. He went bang, started screeching, and he nothing to do, but he was sent back for the section leader.
So you
I met him later on in life. And he never altered in his temperament. He wasn't what we would call today a true name, a puff. But he wasn't a type that could rough it or take it then, you see. He was temperamental.
So you were moving forward with the tapes through,
yes,
moving up to
there was, I remember there was a tape, some sort of tape there, had been laid perhaps the night before, we don't know.
Did but anybody fall into the shell holes, or were you all able to avoid it?
Well, I'd rather not say anything about that, or casualties. At this case, it would be wrong for me to mention anything like that, but it was a scramble to get between the shell holes, but forward we went.
Were you under fire?
Oh yes, definitely under fire. Definitely under fire.
What sort? Was it machine gun or artillery or both or what?
Well, a little of everything. Little of everything. There were some casualties, but I'm not prepared to go into intimate details of that. It would be wrong. But we finally reached our destination. And we landed up in a shell hole or two and gradually got into a position where we could defend whatever we had gained.
You'd actually overrun the Germans' frontline positions, had you?
No, we didn't overrun the German frontline positions. I don't remember seeing any trenches there at all. It was nothing else but a mass of shell holes. We may have got in an outpost. Perhaps it had been bashed with a shell, but it's difficult to recognize any particular line.
When you were going forward over those, what sort of things were in your mind?
Well, to get there as quick as possible, really, without being hit, and pick your way.
Was your religion any help to you, that sort of thing?
Well, I suppose we had faith in those people who were leading us then. Otherwise, it would have been scary. We were bound, our training made us have faith in whoever was leading us, an officer, a section leader, a sergeant, or a corporal. We had an officer with us.
Do you remember your officer's name?
No, I don't. I don't. I remember him after we came out. I don't remember his name, but I'll remember him for one little incident when we came out.
So, when you got, you had this group of shell holes that you were turning.
Yes.
Into. Did you join between them, or would you just take them as?
No, there were four or five of us in one, you see, little place, and four or five in another. We were scattered sort of thing. There was no, shall we say, straight line through at this particular time. They may have been made later on, but our purpose was to get to this particular position, and never mind about digging trenches at that time. We had an objective to achieve, and there was no time to dig trenches. All we had to do was to get a certain amount of cover and a place to stay and defend the place.
Were the holes you were in deep, or what sort of, were they full of water? Or?
Quite a lot of the holes. We didn't have one with ours, one quite so deep, but quite a lot of the shell holes around were deep with water and mud. Water and mud. But there were experiences after we'd came back.
What happened then? You formed this rough shell hole. Line.
Yes, and we held there for about 4 or 5 days.
Were there any counterattacks?
No, no counterattack. Shelling, but no actual. We didn't see any German counterattack. There may have been, shall we say, British troops in front of us. I don't know whether we were the first wave, second wave, or what. You see, there may have been a first wave gone out in front of us, and they were holding.
What was it like in the shell fire and circumstances like that? Could you describe?
Well, the old word, duck, was duck. You know, if you heard a whistle, duck. not in the old word, everybody shouted duck, and you'd all get down as far as you could, see, with you, and then when it whistled and gone overhead, well, that would be, you'd stand up then, but don't show your head above. Just sufficient to just peep over. There was one pointed as a lookout sort of thing, while the rest of us tried to get as best cover as we possibly could. See? Make a sort of a parapet. But one place I remember quite vividly, I saw it when we went out in 87, was one place, Iron Cross Farm. There was a huge German pillbox there.
Was that during your first attack?
Yes, during the first attack. The huge German pillbox we passed, and apparently that had been taken as we went up, perhaps with another section on our left. I have a feeling that we got to Landsmark or somewhere near the Steenbeck River, and that's as far as we went. There may have been troops in front of us. There were certainly troops behind us.
It was a confused situation then.
Well, how could we, in a shell hole, tell who was in front or who was each side of us? All we had, our section, was to hang on grim death there and look after that. And I suppose may have been some yards away, there was another section holding on there.
So what did, during the 4 days, you tried to improve the shell hole bit by bit?
Yes, make a place for a latrine sort of thing. And then of one particular incident, rations were coming up in a sandbag, and I nearly cut the top of my thumb off. The mark is there now. And the officer said...
How did you do that?
Well, opening a tin of bully beef with a knife. And I went to open it and nearly cut the top of my thumb off. There, you can see the mark there. And the officer said, you better get down to CCS, Casualty Clearing Station. I told him, I said, sir, I'm not moving from here. If I'd have started to go back and fell in the shallow, I'd have never got out for the buck and slush. Could bury a house in some of the shell holes with the big crumps.
So who brought the rations up?
Well, the quartermaster's group would bring the rations up in the sandbag.
Of your own battalion?
Yeah. Oh, yes. And they'd be brought up by night.
And there would just
be a whisper over the top, rations, boys. And the sandbag would be there. Maybe, I forget how many we were. Maybe it couldn't have been more, about 9 or 10 in our section. A couple of loaves of bread, bully beef, a McConaughey or something like that, which we had to hold. But one thing was significant, I noticed there, you could always tell when there was a lot of casualties, because instead of being, shall we say, 4 in a loaf, it may be 2 in a loaf, until a day then where they'd count the casualties and the rations would be reorganized again. See, you could always tell. That's one thing I learned when I was out in France. You could always tell when there was a lot of casualties. There'd be extra rations for a day or two until the measure had gone back to the captain quartermaster that, you know, there were only so many, so cut down on rations.
So while you were in these shell holes, you were getting extra, were you? Did you notice that, or was it after?
No, we didn't. There was one occasion where we had a few extra rations when there was a casualty or two. I'd rather not go into that now. But I always remember that. They managed to get everything we ate was cold, obviously. We couldn't cook.
And what were the actual rations like? What was the bully like?
Yes, it was really good. Really good. Corned beef was good. And you'd get then perhaps a tin of pork and beans, a little bit of pork about the size of your fingernail in with the beans. Well, you'd eat them cold. A McConaughey then would be some chunks of meat and some vegetables with it. Well, we'd eat them cold, you see. Because you dare not light a fire.
And you'd get some bread as well.
Some bread as well, you see. And we cut that with our jackknife.
What about tea? Would they bring you tea up, Paul?
Well, I don't remember having tea there, not until perhaps the last day. After about the fifth day, I think we had some sort of slush or tea or other. But
did they bring you water up then, or were you just on your water?
Water bottle. Your water bottle.
So you had to make that last 4 or 5 days?
Oh, yes.
Well,
you didn't want a lot of water because you'd be whittling all the time.
Would you use water from the shell holes, or did you know better?
Oh, we knew better. We'd catch water sometimes in the ground sheet over the rain. Get some water that way. See, but the water in the shell water would be contaminated in one way or the other, see? One thing that struck me, we were coming out, after we come out, it's vague, but I remember seeing mules taking ammunition up in panniers then. And it's a funny thing, the mules sometimes would get stubborn and start whinnying. And they could bet your boots about 2 minutes after there'd be a couple of German shells coming over. I honestly believe that animals have a sixth sense. It's queer, but that's that.
So you were there about 4 or 5 days. Did anything happen during the 4 or 5 days?
In what way?
I mean, besides just holding this, just being there and under fire, so to speak. Did any incidents that you recall?
Nothing really. We were a well-behaved section, shall I say. There were no damn nonsense there because we dare not try anything out of the ordinary. Otherwise, you may have a bullet through your napper. You had to be careful how you moved about. Because, well, you couldn't move about only within your post, you see. There was no funny business crawling over and having a look here or look there. You had to be careful. Just hold the line, and that was it for the time being.
Did your officers or sergeants visit you in your home?
We had an officer with us.
Was he actually with you?
Yes, he was with us, yes.
Would you get any other officers coming along?
No, we only had that one officer with us during that period.
So how did you get the order to come out then?
Well, that came up by night. Came up by night. See, you get the order to withdraw. We withdraw.
So how was the withdrawal accomplished?
Well, we'd come back, we'd have an order now, right, relieved tonight. We'd have the whisper during the day that we're going to be relieved tonight. So what we'd have to do is to tidy up everything that we could and wait until darkness fell. Then everybody had to shut their mouth, and no shouting, no talking. And out we came. I forget who relieved us. I don't remember who relieved us. But out we came.
And where did you go to?
We came back to Canal Bank.
Where you'd be occupying dugouts, would you?
Oh, no.
So what was...
We had to bed down wherever we could. Bed down wherever we could. I don't remember any dugouts that we were in there at all.
Were you in trenches then, or what, did you have cover?
Well, the canal was deep, you see. There may have been a hole here or there, but I don't remember being in any official dugout when we came out. But I know one thing, that we had to have a damn good clean-up when we came out. And here I remember the officer who was with us. I forget his name. We were inspected, and apparently I had some mud left in between the sole of my feet, boots and the upper. Two of us. And for that, we had to wash a limber as punishment for not cleaning our boots properly. I always remember that we had to wash one of the battalion limbers down, the spokes and the wheels and the rims and all that.
How did you feel about that?
Well, felt a bit irked about it because it was a hell of a mess on our boots. But there we are, that is it. You had to get it clean. And of course I had a bit of mud on mine. I always remember that chap.
Were you expected to get your uniform completely clean after?
Well, not completely clean, but you were expected to keep yourself clean. We weren't very long there at Ypres before we moved. We moved then from Ypres.
Where to?
We moved then, we marched down through, if I can remember rightly, we marched down through Saint-Omer, Haysbrook, Merville, Estaires, to a part of the line called Fleur Bay at Bois Grenier. F-L-E-U-R-B-A-Y. And Bois Grenier. It was reckoned to be a very quiet part of the line.
Now, so the only time you spent in the line in Ypres was basically that 4 days?
Yes, 4 or 5 days, yes. Right. Actually in the fighting area.
Just a few more questions about conditions at Ypres then. What about you mentioned the latrines in the thing. What provision did you make at the back of the
hole shed? Hole in one part of the little post or outpost, and everybody had to go in there, officers and all.
Did they have any sort of seat arrangement?
No. No paper. We had to do the best we could. Could be bothered about anything else. The quicker you did it and got your trousers up to be ready, the better. It'd be awful thing to be caught with the trousers down. It was a quick move.
What about lice? Did lice make their appearance early? Or?
No, not there. Not there. Didn't have much lice there at all. In fact, we wouldn't have any time to do what they call crumbing up there in that part of the line.
I'll come back to that then later. What about rats? Were there any rats in evidence?
No, not there. I didn't see any rats there while we were there. Saw them later on, though.
Had they been able to clear out all the bodies from the area?
I'd rather not comment on that.
Fair enough.
Yes, rather not comment on that.
What about the actual... Were you able to keep out of the water in the shell hole, or would your feet be continually wet?
Well, mud, shall we say. Mud.
How deep would it be?
Oh, some of the shallows, you could put a house in them.
The actual mud?
Yes.
And how did your health stand up to the 5 days like that?
Very good, very good. The only casualty I had was this bandage on my thumb. Otherwise, all right.
Was there much sort of sniping or general small arms fire?
Well, you'd hear a crackle. See? You'd hear a crackle. Or a whiz. But the thing was to keep your head down. Keep your head down. You'd have one lookout, see? He'd have made a little breach in there, just sufficient for him to keep his eyes there. And then the rest of us would be keeping down, ready for any particular attack or anything like that. But there was always a lookout.
So what was your daily routine during that 5 days? Would you, starting, say, did you have a stand to in the morning?
Well, yes, we would have a stand too.
And what would that be for
well,
that?
Well, there'd be a count of the section. See that everybody was there, nobody had strayed. They'd have been damn fools if they had, but it was a possibility. See, but see that everyone that was there, no one had strayed, and that was it, see. We were a close-knit little community there. Everybody was conscious of the other person in the section.
So what would happen after stand two?
Well, there'd be the normal, shall we say, appointing of a lookout. Somebody perhaps would be put to, if there was any tidying up to be done.
Say you were on lookout. Do you would have done that at some time?
Oh, yes. Yes, you would.
And what could you see from your shell hole and from your little hole in the...
Very little movement. Very little movement. Everybody should have had their head done. We had no counterattack at that time. Whether any troops were in front of us, we weren't conscious of the affair. See?
Could you see where the German line was? You wouldn't know where it was.
We wouldn't know where it was, you see. We wouldn't know because the ground was so pitted.